News headlines like paramedics busted for taking selfies with patients in ambulances, or a toothless naked woman with a propane tank on a rampage. It must be Florida. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at BayCareEvents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WSF Public Media, I'm Carson Cooper. Writer Craig Pittman graduated from Troy State in Alabama, where his work for the student newspaper there inspired the dean to label him the most destructive force on campus. Back home in Florida, he's covered everything from natural disasters to the Florida legislature, sometimes not the same thing. His coverage of environmental issues for the Tampa Bay Times has won him numerous state and national awards. How's that for a build-up?
That's pretty good.
Welcome, Craig Pittman.
Thanks.
Your new book is called Oh, Florida, How America's Weirdest State Influences the Rest of the Country. And I mentioned in the opening a couple of strange crimes that seem to take place every day here in Florida, but your book goes well beyond that.
Well, that was my idea, was to acknowledge, yes, we are not just the Sunshine State, but the Punchline State, because so much weird news happens here on a regular basis. But also there's a lot more to Florida than just that, than just the things we laugh about. There's a lot of cool stuff here, and you kind of have to accept the kookiness that goes with that.
We're a state where most people are not native, where our laws are, well, you could call them weird, kind of loosey-goosey, and the environments, things like gators and hurricanes and
yes.
Pythons. Boas
yes.
Scares most of the rest of the nation. And, of course, there is that weird news. But you also argue that the nation owes Florida for being a trendsetter.
Yes, that's absolutely true. I mean, and it ranges so widely. I mean, the guy who invented the first computer, John Adam Esoff, grew up in Polk County, where he became fascinated with his father's slide rule. His father was a phosphate mining engineer. So if we didn't have those huge phosphate pits, we wouldn't have a computer to work on now. Jeff Bezos, the guy who started Amazon, his first business was one he started in Miami, where he grew up and went to high school. If he had failed there, would we have ever heard of him or Amazon? Probably not. The list just goes on and on and on.
Didn't the WikiLeaks or the Wikipedia guy, wasn't he from this area?
He lived in St. Petersburg for a long time, yeah, Jimmy Wales.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, you note that without Florida, there would be no NASCAR,
yep.
No Glenn Beck, no Stand Your Ground. Mm-hmm. You know, the Glenn Beck story is interesting to me, being a radio guy. He was a music jock from the Northeast who came down to Tampa to be a talk show host for the very first time. The guy who hired him is actually a pretty good friend of mine. And from mm-hmm. a radio business standpoint, no matter what you think of Glenn Beck, it's quite a story.
Oh, absolutely. And also, don't forget, Rush Limbaugh has been a Florida man since 1996, living and broadcasting from Palm Beach.
I want to thumb through the book in just a moment, but I've got to know this, Craig Pittman. What makes Florida the weirdness capital of the United States?
Well, you have to buy the book for that. No, I'm just kidding. a couple of things. I go through a whole list of things in the book, but a couple of things tend to predominate. One is just the sheer number of people. In 1940, we were the least populous southern state, and now we are the third most populous state in the nation. We have 20 million people living here. And then you layer on top of that the nearly 100 million visitors who come every year. And, of course, everybody's not evenly spread out over the whole state. Everybody's kind of crammed into that 35, 40-mile-wide strip along the coast and mm-hmm. along I-4 where the theme parks are. And so you cram that many people together coming from that many different places, speaking that many different languages, all into one small area, and they're bound to start ramming each other's cars, chasing each other around with machetes and samurai swords, and arguing over whose dog pooped on whose lawn.
It used to be you could not give away the land along the ocean fronts. You know,
right.
Beachfront property was worthless because
yes.
you farmed the land, and you couldn't do that in the salty environment.
Right.
I guess you could blame Henry Flagler for a lot of our problems.
Well, and for creating the idea that, oh, going to the beach was healthy. It was a way to improve your health. And,
right.
and he built these resort hotels, and people started going to the beach, and It suddenly, you know, they wanted to build there as well.
So. That kind of fits into one of my theories, too. I've always thought about this. The population, we have, what, 19 million?
20.
20 million people. And we're all broken up into these specific groups. We've got old people, rich people, tourists, rednecks, mm-hmm. you know, whatever you want to call it, fundamental super religious types.
Right.
And we all drive on the same roads.
Yes.
And we all buy lottery tickets at the same Publix.
Yes. in the book, I quote documentary filmmaker Billy Corbin, who says, "We're not really a melting pot. We're more like one of those TV dinners where the peas tend to lap over into the mashed potatoes from time to time."
The New York Times, which gave O Florida a really good review, mm-hmm. Described Florida as the grease trap under America's George Foreman grill. Illustrated what many of us believe, that all these strange people come from somewhere else.
Oh, yeah. Well, but see, that's not true. A lot of strangeness is native to Florida, as I point out in the book. It goes back to even beyond before we were a state, when we were just a territory, and we were known as a rogue's paradise even then. And then in 1845, our first state flag that we flew over our state capital when we became a state actually said, "Let us alone," which was either a wish or a warning to the other states,
yeah.
not to bother us. But it's continued since then.
I think that theme kind of works its way into the decades from there. Our laws seem to attract people from other parts of the country who like the fact that we don't quite regulate things like they do up north.
No, absolutely. And you saw that particularly during Prohibition, where the rest of the country was told, everybody in the country was told, you can't sell alcohol. But in Florida, we were known as the wettest state in the union because, hey, if the tourists want to drink, that's fine with us. And the police and the sheriffs would look the other way as the bootleggers and smugglers would bring the booze in.
And Florida's got to be a great place for a bootlegger. Think about all those canals and things down in the Everglades.
Coast.
You couldn't
yeah.
find a bootlegger if you tried, really.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing, too, is Jamaica is pretty close to the state's east coast, and there were lots of warehouses full of rum over there just waiting to get shipped over here. And so you would see at the docks, you'd see wealthy people in their limos pull up and have people offload these crates labeled fish that, of course, did not contain fish. And then the folks would go off and have their parties.
Didn't we have a governor who was a gun runner?
Yes, Napoleon Broward. He was a gun runner and a sheriff, which, I guess he was trying to work both sides of the street there.
Well, it's warm here year-round, of course. We have swamps, beaches, hurricanes, fire ants, alligators, palmetto bugs. Mm-hmm. The list goes on and on. I guess we are kind of a scary state, huh?
We are. Well, my theory is that Florida is actually trying to kill us. we have more lightning than anywhere else in the United States. We have more sinkholes than anywhere else in the U.S. We get hit by more hurricanes than any other state, and yet we call it a paradise.
Yeah. One thing that I think I came away from this book is that you say journalism has benefited.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's actually one of the things I mentioned in the book is that the big secret about journalism in Florida is that it's actually a lot of fun, because no matter what beat you cover, you're going to wind up covering something weird and unusual you wouldn't see in any other state. And I mentioned, a couple of them. You know, if you're covering City Hall, well, the Ocoee City Hall is sinking. That was one story. if you're covering politics, well, then you're liable to be covering the U.S. Senate candidate who admits he slaughtered a goat and drank its blood.
Mm.
just this crazy. And then, of course, if you're on the police beat, then, it's just a bonanza, a daily bonanza. I mentioned in there about the one time I was filling in on the police beat and went out to the jail to pick up the overnight arrest reports, and the jail staff had very thoughtfully placed right on top the report about a woman who'd gotten upset with her boyfriend and hit him over the head with a lawn gnome.
Oh,
and
okay.
Not just any lawn gnome, but a New Orleans Saints commemorative lawn gnome.
There you go, Saints, huh? My guest is Craig Pittman, author of O Florida, How America's Weirdest State Influences the Rest of the Country. And it's broken up into 18 chapters. Beginning with your personal history growing up in Florida, at what point in your young life Did you realize that a governor who calls himself a he-coon is actually kind of weird?
Well, two things. One, it wasn't the governor then. There's actually two he-coons in Florida political history. The first one was Bob Sykes, a congressman from Pensacola. And he boasted of being the he-coon back then. And, you know, of course, we all thought that was normal to have politicians calling themselves, you know, these nicknames like the he-coon. I mentioned the Bandy Rooster, W. Childers, and some others. And it didn't really dawn on me that this stuff was weird until I went off to college in Alabama and people were asking me about it. And I thought, well, okay, I guess that is a little unusual. If even people in Alabama think it's strange, then it must be strange.
I think of Lawton Chiles when I think of he-coon.
Yes, and he adopted that nickname later when he was running against Jeb Bush, referring to himself as the he-coon and saying the he-coon walks just before the light of day. And you could just see the confusion on Jeb's face when he heard that in the debate, like, what? Has he
didn't he adopt that that nickname when he was running for Senate? And I know he was doing those walks across.
Well, he was walking Lawton originally because he walked the length of the state just to get attract attention to his campaign and his first campaign, and it worked. And so that became his symbol, the boots with the hole in the sole, because he had walked the length of the state to meet everybody. But then when he was running against Jeb Bush, then he became the he-coon.
So what are some of the other early tales that stand out for you?
Oh, well, one of them that I tell in the book is we had at the Escambia High School in Pensacola, they had a huge fight over the Confederate flag. This was in the mid-70s, and where it had been the symbol of Escambia High School, they had been the rebels, and parents of African-American students went to court and said, we don't want to be the rebels. That's offensive to us. And a judge agreed, so they had to pick a new nickname and a new symbol, and the white students didn't want to give it up, and so they ended up they tried to run it up the flagpole. Black students stopped them, and it became a huge riot that basically wrecked the whole school, and the National Guard came in, and they became the hall monitors for a while. And there was a politician who got involved in all this named Smokey Peden. And Smokey Peden, who presented himself as this law and order candidate, and he was trying to, you know, help the white students get their Confederate flag back and so forth. And, of course, he was really just getting a lot of attention so that he could then run for sheriff as this law and order candidate. However, he was not successful because it turned out he was financing his campaign by selling cocaine.
Oh, okay. What year was that?
It's like 1976, 77, something
wow.
like that.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And so, yeah, you tend to remember things like that.
My guest is Craig Pittman, author of Oh, Florida, How America's Weirdest State Influences the Rest of the Country. It's published by St. Martin's Press. You can find a link at WSFnews.org. Just click on the Florida Matters link. I'm Kirsten Cooper. This is Florida Matters. My guest is Craig Pittman, author of Oh, Florida, How America's Weirdest State Influences the Rest of the Country. I can tell you that there are those who call Florida a very scary state because of, as we mentioned in the first half of the show, hurricanes and sharks, sinkholes. Is it true? Labor Day, 1969, it rained golf balls in
Punta
Gorda.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And they don't know why, although the theory is that a tornado or something like that had somehow sucked up the contents of a retention pond / water hazard at a golf course and then dropped them all, you know, all those Titleists and so forth in the streets of Punta Gorda. But it's things fall from the sky here. I didn't mention it in the book, but there's an instance where a teacher, I believe he was in Fort Myers, where he's outdoors doing something and got hit in the head with a fish. That apparently an osprey had dropped it, but somehow
Of it raining frogs and fish and things like that. The
golf balls,
that was a new one for me.
Only in Florida.
Now, the land hustlers, we're kind of familiar with that back in the 20s. Somehow must have left a legacy that lives on today somehow in Florida.
Can you
take us through the decades?
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, I mentioned it actually kind of starts around 1910, 1915 with a guy named Dickie Bowles, who was the original real estate hustler for Florida. I think he's the person that is the reason why we have the saying, if you believe that, I've got some swampland in Florida to sell you.
Right.
He bought vast acreage from the state of Florida that was all underwater, and the state was trying to get rid of it because they needed money to continue draining the Everglades, which thank God they didn't quite finish. So they sold off all this swampland, and they promised that, someday we're going to drain it and it's going to be wonderful farmland. And so Dickie Bowles bought all this land and then sent out salesmen all over the country, especially to the desperate widows of the Midwest, to sell this land and convince people, hey, this is worth buying, it's going to be worth a fortune, and so forth. And, of course, once people came down here to actually visit their land, they discovered that no draining had occurred. It wasn't connected to water or sewer or anything like that. One farmer later testified, because lots of people got indicted, he testified, I've bought land by the foot and land by the acre, but I've never bought land by the gallon before.
Craig, I love roadside attractions.
Yes.
And we've got plenty of them here in Florida. The Airstream Ranch here in the Bay Area,
yes,
just off I-4 in Tampa. That mm-hmm. Coral Castle, I've never visited. The one down near Miami.
It's quite bizarre.
Fake dinosaurs.
Dinosaur World, one of my favorites.
Why do we have so many dinosaurs in Florida?
Because they're just such an unusual thing to see. And my theory, there's no way to prove this, but my theory is there are more fake dinosaurs in Florida than in any other state.
Just Utah?
There's about 150 or so, I think, at Dinosaur World, although they're missing one. I didn't mention this in the book proper, but it's in the end notes that somebody stole one of the dinosaurs from Dinosaur World.
Really?
Yes. And so there are many mysteries about that. One is, why would you want to steal a dinosaur, a fake dinosaur? And the other is, what would you do with it? I mean, and they've never found it. They've never found it. So if somebody still has it, it must be disguised as something else. But what? I don't know.
This is Florida Matters. My guest is Craig Pittman, author of Oh, Florida, How America's Weirdest State Influences the Rest of the Country. Fake Florida often gets in the way of real Florida.
That's true.
And as you point out, with a wave of clueless manatee riders
yes.
around the state, notably back in 2013, a woman in St. Pete Beach, leaped on a manatee
mm-hmm.
and that was swimming by. Oh, those wacky tourists.
Yeah, well, no, she was living here. She was a resident.
I thought she was from up north.
No, she was around. I don't know where she came from originally, but she was a St. Pete resident and didn't realize there was anything wrong with jumping on an endangered species and riding it like it's a carousel horse. and even though people were yelling at her to stop and several people took pictures of her, and so although she went into a pretrial intervention program and wound up with no criminal record, I think her ultimate punishment was people saw pictures of her thighs all around the world.
Oh,
so,
my.
Yeah, that's bad. But, fake Florida is often what gets the most attention. And I mentioned in the book, the most famous piece of architecture in Florida is a house that nobody lives in. It's Cinderella's Castle.
right.
But there's so much real Florida to be amazed by. I mean, we're the only state that has mermaid listed as a government job because the state park system bought Wikiwachi. So that means the taxpayers get to foot the bill for waterproof lipstick and shell bras. And people love to go see them swimming around. But, they're the real mermaids are here in Florida, too, the manatees.
Right.
And they're a very cool thing to see. And, as long as you don't ride on them, they're a wonderful, magical thing that we have that nobody else has. We're the only place in the world where alligators and crocodiles both live,
mm-hmm.
Although people do object to them showing up at their picnics or in their yards or knocking on the door at 5 in the morning with their tail. Mm-hmm.
And speaking of alligators and real Florida getting in the way of fake Florida, a lot of tourists seem to tempt fate with alligators.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, it's people feel like they want to be the star of their own nature show, mm-hmm. so they ride the manatee or feed the alligator, which is a great thing to do because they come up close, right up to the point where they take your hand off.
Right.
So it's you have to respect real Florida because, like I said, real Florida will try to kill you if it gets the chance.
I remember back in the mid-90s, I think 1995, two women fined $30 for having coffee on Bel Air Shores.
Yes, that story's in there. Yep.
That was a pre-internet story, by the way, still made national headlines.
Absolutely.
In fact, you called it a brouhaha.
Yes. not me. The headline writers referred to it as BREW,
okay.
Brouhaha.
Right.
Because it was just such a bizarre thing to happen that they would get a ticket for having coffee on the beach. But the mayor was quite determined to prosecute that, and the state attorney's office said, no, we're not.
We do have some unusual laws, though, in Florida, don't we?
Yes. Oh, yeah. And the law can be very flexible in Florida also. And I mentioned in the book that goes back quite a ways as well, that when Miami-Dade County was first started, and it was started by a guy who was in the wrecking business and didn't think he was getting a fair shake from the court in Key West over what he could keep from shipwrecks, so he started his own county and based it in – originally the county seat was his base, Jacob Houseman's base, which was in Indian Key.
Mm-hmm.
And so the sheriff and the justice of the peace for this new county, part of their pay was based on however many fines they collected. And the only problem was the only illegal behavior they could find was that of their boss, Mr. Houseman, the wrecker. So they went around and started charging people with doing things they hadn't done. And they said, but, you know, you don't have to go to trial. You just pay the fine. Oh, okay. And then so people would pay them to make them go away. And they were doing quite well at it until they were caught.
Yeah, man. You know, what passes for weapons in Florida is a little unusual. Bananas.
Yes.
Turkey necks.
Yep.
Taco Bell burritos.
Mm-hmm.
They've all shown up in police reports as assault weapons.
Catfish.
Catfish.
That was my favorite. The guy who threw a catfish at one of his – it's a guy he was having a fight with, and the fins actually stuck into the guy's back, and they had to take him to the hospital and cut him out.
Oh, man. And you mentioned the New Orleans Saints gnome.
Yes, yes. Because people, you know, in the heat, tempers flare very quickly, and people tend to grab for whatever's close.
Yeah.
Another one of my favorite stories is, and this is really an only in Florida story, this guy who was fighting with his girlfriend in Gainesville, and it had reached the point where he wanted a weapon, and he reached for the closest thing, which was a 3-foot alligator he was keeping in his bathtub.
Ah, okay. Wasn't an alligator also used at a drive-through Wendy's? Or,
very recently, yes. A guy who was pulling a prank, he said he had found this alligator, and he tossed it through the drive-through window at Wendy's. So that marks the second instance where the charge of assault with a deadly weapon, the weapon was an alligator.
Man, oh, man. There have been a lot of strange deaths in Florida.
Yes.
And one that's always intrigued me is that of Mary Hardy Reeser.
Yes.
St. Petersburg evidently spontaneously combusted in her apartment back in 1951. That apartment is, I think I drove by it once. It's still there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And that case is a famous one. In fact, a novelist named Kit Reed actually wrote a novel based on that case, suggesting that there were people who had the ability to cause spontaneous combustion in others. It's quite a good
novel. I haven't heard that angle.
It's quite an intriguing
novel. So it could have been
novel.
A murder?
Well, that was her suggestion. There was some supernatural overtones to it. But yeah, it's a very famous case. The FBI even investigated, and they didn't think it was supernatural, but there were a lot of things they couldn't explain about it. My favorite death story, I mean, this is a very macabre aspect of things, but my favorite death story in Florida is the guy who died while he was out golfing, and the police came out and covered the body with a sheet and then allowed golfers to play through.
All right. I'm having the best game of my life.
Yes, exactly.
And now somebody dies ahead of me.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Sort of a Caddyshack moment.
We tend to get lots of serial killers in Florida.
Yes.
It must be the way the interstate sort of funnel these people down.
Well,
here.
And our transient population, they figure, yeah, you know, these folks won't be missed. But yeah, Danny Rowling being one of the most famous ones. His case, he was the Gainesville Ripper, and his case inspired the Scream movies. Eileen Wuornos, the female serial killer who inspired the movie Monster. And you can still visit the bar where she had her last drink, and they have, you know, T-shirts with her picture on them if you're of that.
If you're so inclined.
If you're so inclined. And, of course, the most famous one being Ted Bundy,
right,
who was caught in my hometown of Pensacola. I'm always very proud of this, by a sharp-eyed patrolman who realized he was driving a stolen car and pulled him over, and Bundy tried to get away, and the patrolman actually chased him down on foot, had no idea who he'd caught, and Bundy told him, "You should have killed me."
Oh, man. One story I'd never heard till I read your book was that of Jim Williams, condemned
yes.
to death in Old Sparky back in 1927. No one could decide who should pull the switch, so he...
And they argued about it for about 10 minutes while he's sitting there just sweating buckets. It's like, you pull it. No, I'm not going to pull the switch. You pull the switch.
Yeah.
And so finally they couldn't resolve it, so they sent him back to his cell, you know, and, where I'm assuming he changed his pants. And they never got around to executing him. And ultimately he was on a work detail and saw a woman and her child being chased by a bull, and he jumped down off this truck and ran over and saved them. And as a result, the governor commuted his sentence.
Wow.
But he would never sit in a barber chair after that because it reminded him too much of Old Sparky.
Can't blame him.
No, not a bit.
Is it true that your friend, Bill Cotterell in Tallahassee, started the streaking fad?
Well,
that
not
swept
personally.
The nation back in
he
the
didn't
70s.
Personally started, but he did the story about that at Florida State University holds that our universities are very distinguished places. University of Florida started the sports drink industry with Gatorade,
right?
And Florida State started the streaking fad of the 1970s, where a couple of kids, you know, took off their clothes and ran across the campus as a protest against what? Who knows? Clothes, I guess. And so the student paper was in on it and got a picture, and they tipped off Bill Cotterell, and Cotterell picked up the story and wrote it, and they ran the, you know, carefully cropped photo, and it went all over the world and inspired other college students to take off their clothes and race around. And so Bill met Bob Woodward of Watergate fame once, and he told him, well, yeah, you brought down a president, but I got college kids all over the country to take their clothes off, so I think our achievements are about equal.
Right, on par. Now, this is a weird story. You mentioned JFK, or no, you mentioned Disney.
Yes.
Earlier. And on November 22nd, 1963, yes, the day JFK was shot, Walt Disney was in Tampa, right?
Yep.
And he took off in a plane from Tampa and flew over what would become, several years later, Walt Disney World. And he made the decision that day,
yes,
same day as JFK was assassinated, to put Walt Disney World where it is.
It was that day is an incredible turning point. He had looked at other places, including St. Louis, as a potential location for his East Coast, his next theme park. Because he was looking for a place. Walt's big problem with Disneyland was that it was hemmed in by other development and it couldn't expand. And he wanted a place where he had lots of room to grow, lots of land. And so he had heard about this land in Florida, and he flew over it and saw that the Florida Turnpike and Interstate 4 were crossing in that area, and mm-hmm. it was near other highways. And he said, that's it. That's what I want. And lots of empty land. It was vacant, of course, because it was swamp. It was wetlands.
Right.
People couldn't build on there even if they wanted to. And so he worked with an attorney down in Miami who had been affiliated with the CIA and drug runners and the mafia to create these shell companies that went in and bought the land so people wouldn't know it was Disney buying it. And then they came in and started building. And Walt looked at the water that was already there, and he said, no, this won't do. It's the wrong color. You know, this tannin-colored water, this is not the way it looks in my imagination. Can you make it blue? And they said, Mr. Disney, if you spend enough money, we'll make it whatever color you want.
Yeah. What a weird day. And,
yes.
And Walt Disney and I guess his lawyers or handlers got off the plane.
Yes, got off the plane.
Saw people
crying,
weeping.
Yes.
And that's when he learned about JFK.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. But one more question.
Okay.
One more question.
Okay.
What's your favorite story that was left out of O Florida?
I don't know if I'd call it my favorite, but the one that several people have asked me about is the guy who, says he had a love affair with a dolphin.
And I remember that.
There's actually a documentary about that you can watch on YouTube if you are really interested, but it was actually too weird.
I do remember that one. Craig Pittman, author of O Florida, How America's Weirdest State Influences the Rest of the Country. It has been a long, strange trip that
and it's
I hope
not over
will
yet.
Continue.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Sure.
O Florida, published by St. Martin's Press. You can find a link at WUSFnews.org. Just click on the Florida Matters link. And that is it for today's show. O Florida Matters, produced by Robin Sussingham, engineered by Richard Jimenez, and is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.